a long time ago that there have been times where I've done the teaching, and he asked me a couple weeks ago, you know, is that true? Would you? I said, I'd love doing it. And he'd say, well, and there, here I am. So please know that if you don't like today, please come back next week and hear Kendrick. All right? That's the lesson from that one. All right. But I got to tell you, I love the chance to talk to us the last week, Sunday of the year. That we have, we have New Year's. And that brings a moment where many of us will pause, reflect back on the last year, think of things good and bad that have happened, think about what we hope, our hopes and dreams for the new year. And that, frankly, gives me a chance to try to think about a course correction. Where am I? Where am I going? And do I need to tack? Do I need to shift course and make some adjustments in where I'm going here? So let me ask you a question. This is a open session here. What do you think the top 10 New Year's resolutions are? Lose weight. Number two. Number two is lose weight. Oh, what's that, John? What's that, David? Start on the right foot. That's not on the list off the internet. I got one out of ten. Gino, exercise more. Exercise number one. Exercise more and lose weight. Okay, there's the top two. Quit smoking. Excellent. Number seven. Well, okay, there's a smoker among us. Okay. Keep thinking with me. Come on. What are the top ten? Eat healthy. No. Somehow, quit drinking didn't make. And eating healthy is not on here either. Travel more. That's number nine. Get a new job. No, that's not on here. What's that? Go to the gym. Well, exercise more. Yes. What's that? Save money. That's number number six. Get out of debt. That's number six. Yeah, Chris. Yep. That's number six. Boy, once we got on the money thing, there's like five of them. Okay, I got that one. Yes. Pray more. Nope, that's not on the list. Study more. Read more. I got read more as number 10. Okay. Number three is get organized. Number four is to learn a new skill or a hobby. And number seven is friends. So there's our 10, folks, okay? That's what most of us think about. It's like, okay, you know, next year, what do I want to do here? And those are the specific things that people have thought about. But, you know, I want to do something different here. Instead, I want to challenge us to seek wisdom. That as we think about rising above the daily grind, as we think about goals and what have you, wisdom is to me a special category. And if we can, let me take a look here at Proverbs. Turn your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. And if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. To me, wisdom is different than being smart. There's a lot of smart people. There's people who got their PhDs. They tell me that PhDs are people who know something an inch wide but a mile deep. So you ask a person, what'd you get your PhD in? 1812, something happened, and this person studied it to the nth degree. He knows more about that than anyone, and then he wrote it. So the fact he's really smart about that thing. But instead of going an inch wide and a mile deep, you know, I think wisdom talks about perspective. To me, it means judgment. It means making good decisions about what life is all about. So notice with me, as we look at this proverb, he talks about calling out for insight, crying aloud for understanding. If you look for it, ask for silver. All those people who want to save money, look for wisdom as you would look for silver. Search for it as a hidden treasure. All of these things are descriptions of effort. That if we want wisdom, we pursue it, we seek it, we invest to accomplish it. So the good news is that First of all, I'll just give you a clue here. I've got 30 PowerPoint slides. So if you want to know, you know, when we're done, you can just kind of say, okay, is that 30 yet? I think so. You can keep track of our progress through this this journey here if you're so inclined. So our guide for this, our guide is the wisest man ever. Who do you think the wisest man ever is? Solomon. Okay. All right. Solomon is the Bible says is the wisest man ever, right? In 1 Kings, we have the story. This is right after Solomon was installed as the king, right? And at Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, "Ask for whatever you want me to give you." Solomon answered, "So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong, for who is able to govern this great people of yours?" The Lord was pleased that Solomon asked for this. So God said to him, "Since you have asked for this, and not for long life, or for wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be." So there is the declaration, the establishment that that Scripture says that there's never one in before Solomon, never anyone to follow Solomon who will have his wisdom. I want you to know here's his wisdom was world famous during his time, and those of us who know the Bible know that the Queen of Sheba traveled to come experience Solomon's wisdom. So I looked up, okay, Sheba, you know, where's Sheba? And Sheba was a kingdom at that time. Some people say it was Ethiopia. Other people say it was across the Red Sea over in Yemen, right? There was evidently a kingdom possibly that covered both sides of the Red Sea. And either Ethiopia or Yemen was Sheba. And that's 1,400 miles from Jerusalem. Now, I want you to know that from the internet, it tells me that camels can do 20 miles a day. So you tell me, do the math, who can divide 1,400 by 20? 70. 70 days. She rode a camel for 70 days to go sit at the feet of Solomon and to say, okay, so you think you know it all, you know? And you know what's crazy to me? All we have to do is open our Bibles. Because Solomon wrote Ecclesiastes. And Ecclesiastes is a book about wisdom. I want you to know, how many of you have read the book of Ecclesiastes? Raise your hand if you've read it. I want you to know, when you get to know me, I'm kind of a smart aleck, okay? I want you to know that I kind of feel bad, but I kind of don't. Because shame on you who've never read Ecclesiastes. We're going to do Ecclesiastes in one day, okay? I'm going to run through Ecclesiastes, okay? But this is just an appetizer, you know? I'll tell you, for those of you who raised your hand, and many of you who haven't read Ecclesiastes, the things I talk about today, you will already know. They're part of your walk with God. They're part of the overall wisdom of Scripture, okay? But I want you to know, I'm not apologetic about reminding you, because I know I need to be reminded. Every two or three years, I get my panties in a bunch about something. I get upset, I'm mad, and I get myself all wound up. And every two or three years, I stop and I go read Ecclesiastes, and it gives me perspective about my life, what's important, what's not important. And if you have read it before, you know what? Today I'm going to remind you, but I think we all need to be reminded. That's the nature of our sinful heart that we forget and stray and lose perspective. For those of you that have never read it, this might be a radical moment of recognizing what's important. Okay, so wisdom, we're going to ponder deep questions, all right? This is not like, you know, what's Washington's birthday, or, you know, when did America become an independent country? This is not knowledge about facts. This asks questions about why do I exist? What is the purpose for my life? How do I live a meaningful life? And those are the questions that wisdom addresses. And by the way, Solomon's answer might surprise you. Because a lot of A lot of people think that, you know, oh, church people, you know, they kind of sit straight and they're kind of uptight and they're and guess what? That's a pretty accurate description for a lot of us. So if you fit in that category, I hope today will surprise you and that you will lighten up. So let's take a look here. Let's take a look. All right. Spoiler alert. All right. We find meaning in life by accepting that everything this life has to offer is meaningless. Whoa, whoa. Later on in the message, I'll ask you if you're depressed yet. You should be depressed. This is we have a sorry experience on this planet. So the fact is, there's a spoiler alert. Let's take a look at the first couple of verses here, right? Meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. I think that covers just about the whole, right? What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Only maybe half of you can remember the 1970s. There was a movie in the 1970s with Robert Redford. I think it was called The Natural. I forget. I don't know. But all I know is that in this thing, he was a competitive skier, snow skier, right? And he was at the Olympic level. And he was on the cusp of becoming an Olympic champion, a world champion. And he went home to visit his dad on the ranch. And his dad says, "When are you coming home?" And he goes, "Dad, don't you understand? I'm about ready to become the world champion." And his dad says, "Yeah, the world's full of them." Right? Whatever's been done will be done again. Whatever aspirations you have, whatever dreams, whatever you imagine in your wildest guess of grandeur and greatness that you might accomplish, guess what? The year after you, someone else will do it again. So there you go. So we address our desire for meaning by accepting that this life on earth is meaningless. We resolve the question of significance by remembering my place in creation. I'm just a human being. And if the sooner I accept that and allow myself to make peace with that, the sooner I can live wisely, live with joy, enthusiasm, abundance. Let's take a look. Okay, the first thing he does in chapter 2, he moves into illusions. What are the mirages? What are the things that people chase that they think is going to make them happy? But it won't. So the first thing he has to do is disavow us of our idols, right? And the first one he mentions is pleasure, all right? Here's his words. "I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. What does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing..." Let me see, I better either read from there or read from here. "Or embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives." So here he says, I'm gonna devote myself to pleasure, right? I don't know for you. My suggestion is that our culture leads us to pursue pleasure, that we think we'll be satisfied with some experience that will give pleasure, right? Here you go. For those, you know, again, on that top 10 thing, travel more, right? Here's today's LA Times, right? Travel in 2019, right? And they have some pretty amazing experiences. And some of us read the paper and say, "Wow, you know, hey, Vic, you want to go there?" And if you're married to Vic, she goes, "No." So you don't. But the fact is that some of us read these kinds of things, and it's kind of like, you know what? I'd like to go to Machu Picchu. You know, I'd like to float down the Grand Canyon. And they got rafts that go down. It takes a week. You float down the Grand Canyon. And we have these kind of things we'd like to do because we think that would be enjoyable and fun, right? He says he gives them, well, first of all, the advertising world tells us that you deserve it. You only have one life, which is true, and that we should experience everything that this world has to offer. And I frankly don't disagree with that either. Except what? Except, have I made it an idol? Do I believe that's going to fulfill me? Do I think that that's going to give meaning to my life? Because that's the place where we get in trouble, right? In here he says, "I cheered myself with wine." my goodness, you know, our culture has a chemical dependency, you know, epidemic. And we have people who are overdosing in opioids and much less just, you know, the challenges with alcohol. My mother grew up in an orphanage because both of her parents were alcoholics. And the idea of, well, you know what, let me and he says, you know, that I gave myself to wine. But his message is what? It's a mirage. It's meaningless. Because why? Because he said that after I did all of that, it was meaningless. It was not, it didn't satisfy. So the next of his, I'm sorry, go back one. So the next of his things is the delights of the heart of man. Right? Let's hear his description of that. I undertook great, great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I had gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself, the treasure of kings and of provinces. Right? I acquired men and women singers and a harem as well. The delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. And all of this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all of my work, and this was the reward for my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. So again, what do you think will make you happy? You think more money will make you happy? I want you to know, money is elusive, all right? When I was in college, I can distinctly remember having $400 in the bank and feeling like, man, I am bulletproof. I got a cushion. You know, I'm safe. They can't hurt me now. I got $400, and then my car would break, and I'd have nothing. And I'd say, "Oh man, I hope nothing else breaks." But the fact is, you know, $400 was a sense of security when I was 20. Right? Guess what? Newsflash. I have $400 in the bank today, and I still wonder if I'm vulnerable. Whatever amount of money you think is going to say, boy, if I could just get that amount of money, then I'm okay. Someday, I pray, you'll get that amount of money. And guess what? You're going to stand back and say, not quite, I don't have peace yet. John D. Rockefeller, one of the richest men in the world, right? A reporter asked him, how much money is enough? Does anyone know the answer? Just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. And so again, if you think money's going to make you happy, you know, good luck on that. Some of you might be, in your job, and you say, you know what, if I could just get promoted, if they would just recognize that I could do my boss's job better than he's doing it, and some of us are searching for love. It might be a sweetheart, it might be your spouse, it might be a parent, but somehow you're looking for affirmation from another human being to satisfy you. You know what? And again, he built great houses. It might be a bigger house. I'm going to say, you know what? Boy, if I just had more square footage, more place to store my junk. We moved into a house with a 3-car garage. You know what? We came from a house with a 1-car garage. And when we moved into that house, we said, man, you know what? Look at all that space. We can still park 1 car in our garage, okay? But somehow the junk just comes to fill up the space you got. What else we got? Thinner and healthier. I'd be happy if I could just lose 20 pounds or whatever it might be. If I didn't have this health condition, I'd be happy. Recognition and fame. Again, the delights of the heart of man. Whatever your heart delights in, right? And don't you know that Solomon was in a place to where he could deny himself nothing and have it all, right? And at the end of it all, what does he say? Nothing was gained under the sun. Now, let's look at the next mirage, okay? The next mirage is wisdom, even wisdom. So here we're looking at wisdom, right? So here again, he says, then I turned my thoughts to wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness, right? The wise man has eyes in his head while the fool walks in darkness, but I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I thought in my heart, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said in my heart, this is also meaningless. For the wise men, like the fool, will not be long remembered in the days to come. Both will be forgotten. Like the fool, the wise man too must die. Okay. All right, this is my timer. Oh, goodness. Okay. All right, so the wise man too must die, right? What's your pursuit of wisdom? I will let you know that for you to graduate from high school, please do that. For you to go to college, if you can, and, you know, please do that. And you'll be around, you know. I'll let you know. I went to a college to where probably half the freshmen were pre-med, okay? And you know what? We had one suicide per semester on campus because people realized that I'm not getting the grades to get into medical school. My whole life, my whole family, everyone thinks I should be a doctor, and I see my dreams collapsing, and I'm in despair. In fact, there's no reason to live. I graduated from undergrad, and I went to law school. When I went to law school, I thought, okay, you know, now I'll be around people who are smarter than the people who are so lost that they're willing to take their own lives, right? And when I got to law school, I found out that there, most of the people just wanted to make money, that their vision, their idea of doing something meaningful was big houses and trophy wives. And then, you know, I did. After that, I became a lawyer, and I went to Washington, D.C., and I was a lawyer for the federal government. And in my agency, in my office, they had some of the lawyers from some of the best schools in the United States. About half the folks graduated from Harvard Law School. And for a year, I had an office mate. The two of us had to share an office. And he went to Harvard undergrad. If you didn't know this, it's really hard to get there. You got to do really good on those standardized tests. And then he went to Harvard Law School. He spoke seven languages. Including languages that didn't have, like, the Latin letters. He spoke Russian, and he spoke Mandarin, right? And so I'd be sitting at my desk, I'd go, hey, Jim, how would you say that in Russian? He would say, I go, yeah, that sounds about right, you know? But you know what? After I left the government, he called me about a year later. Hey, Peter, I want you to know something. What's that? I became a Christian last week, and I just got baptized. I thought you would want to know. You know what? The best education and all the brains in the world, you know what? It doesn't answer the questions of what am I doing? What is life all about? I can learn seven languages, but the fact is that, you know, that it was, he needed Christ to make meaning of his life. So whatever your journey is, I'll just let you know that being wise, we still die. Okay, last mirage. Toil and anxious striving. Okay? Here's Solomon's cue on toil. So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of this is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What does a man get for all the toil and anxious striving with which he labors under the sun? All his days, his work is pain and grief. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is meaningless. So now I want to ask you, are you depressed yet? He's telling us it's a pretty sad lot that we have here. We work, we go to, yeah, I mean, in fact, we can sum it up this way. Life is hard, and then you die. I don't know if you, that was a, not, all right. So Solomon starts by destroying all of our illusions. None of them are going to satisfy us. It will always be the next thing. And now the good news is that I've got 6 minutes to give you the answers. Okay. Solomon's answer. Eat, drink, and find satisfaction in your work. To accomplish this is a gift from God. Here's the verse. A man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases him. This too is meaningless. A chasing after the wind. What does a worker gain from his toil? I've seen the burden God has laid on men. He has made everything beautiful in his time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men. Yet they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is a gift from God. So I want you to know, ask God for the wisdom to be satisfied and content with life's simple pleasures. A good meal. He encourages drinking. I've already told you my family has challenges with alcohol, so we try to avoid that. But, you know, I do look for special kind of flavored drinks that bring a little bit of pleasure in my life without putting me in danger. And also to be satisfied with your work. If you're not satisfied in your work, you haven't asked God for that gift. And boy, do I encourage you to do that. Ask God to give you a contentedness, a peace with your work. Pray that God would give us the gift of perspective and wisdom to enjoy simple pleasures and our work. You know, I want you to know that some of us in this room are retired, and it's kind of like, okay, well, what's my work? Boy, I sure want to let you know that that I never read anywhere in the Bible to where it says, hey, you know what, when you reach a certain age, you should do nothing. That there are lots and lots of ways to serve your community. In fact, specifically, I think it's in James where he says, you know, older men mentor the younger men. Older women mentor the younger women. Might be First Peter. But the fact is that the idea that, you know, I have free time on my hand, I don't need to go punch a clock and bring home a paycheck. I've been relieved of that, praise God, right? But boy, I want you to know that I believe the church is like, this is a good season for this, is like football, right? And the analogy is this, that at a football game, there are 22 people on the field who are playing their hearts out, and they are in dire need of rest, right? And there's 100,000 people in the stands who are going crazy. They are in dire need of exercise. And guess what? I think sometimes around churches, we got a small handful of folks that are running around, and they need people to help teach the kids and to be involved in mentoring. And beyond our church, we have a whole community that has needs. So Kendrick has a friend who was on staff at another church. And he retired recently, and he told Kendrick, I want you to know that I will give you and this church 10 hours a week to just do handyman stuff around your church. And for the last 4 or 5 weeks, he has been here every week for gives 10 hours, and he's helping getting things done here. So you know what? In light of the time, okay, I'm comparing my time back. Okay, no, I'm gonna stay with it here. Okay, remember that God is in heaven and we are on earth, all right? So guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven, and you are on earth. So let your words be few. As a dream comes when there are many cares, so the speech of a fool when there are many words. When you make your vow to God, do not delay in fulfilling it. He has no pleasure in fools. So again, remember our place. I believe sin, the essence of sin, is allowing myself to think that I am God, that the world should revolve around me, the core of selfishness. And wisdom is to have the humility. I think it's human nature to rail against God when we suffer. We see that in the book of Job. David in the Psalms says, why do the evil prosper? But here he tells us, and Job concludes with, "Who am I to question God, and for us to submit and humble ourselves to God as compared to complaining?" Now, again, for many of us, you know, it's a process. Something happens, and you feel like you've been victimized in some way. And I don't expect us to immediately get there, but boy, I sure hope that you read the Book of Ecclesiastes every couple of years and say, "Okay, I gotta get off my high horse here and remember that I'm just a mere mortal." All right, money is such a powerful thing. I want to dive in on money. Look at what he says about money. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. As the goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them? The sleep of the laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. I have seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owner. You know, one of the maxims I've heard on bumper stickers is you can never be too rich or too thin. But right here, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owner, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when he has a son, there is nothing left for him. Naked a man comes from his tomb, and as he comes, so he departs. He takes nothing from his labor that he can carry in his hand. So Solomon's answer regarding money: there are two gifts from God, prosperity and the ability to enjoy it. Give us the next slide, Al. Then I realized that it is good and proper for a man to eat and to drink and to find satisfaction in his toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given him. For that is his lot. That is his purpose. That is our assignment. Moreover, when God gives any man wealth and possessions and enables him to enjoy them, to accept his lot and be happy in his work, this is a gift from God. If you don't have a contentment with how much money you have, and just if you're not able to enjoy the prosperity that we experience, oh yeah, okay. Well, no, just, you know, it's 11:26. All right, it yeah. If you do not have the ability to enjoy the prosperity, and I want to make sure you know something. That when I was in college, the book was Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger. Some of you may remember that. Today, the book is A Hole in My Gospel. It was published about 4 or 5 years ago by the president of World Vision. And here's a man who travels the world helping for relief, a Christian organization that mobilizes resources for people who are starving and what have you. And in there, he documents, you know, the amazing prosperity that we have in the United States. Our problem is that we look at each other and say, you know what, she makes more money than me. If I had that much money, I'd be happy. But the fact is, we don't look at the person. The United States has 5% of the world's population, and we consume 40% of the world's wealth. If you live in this country, folks, we are in the top 1% of the wealth of the world. The people who are the poorest in the United States still have a lifestyle that is the envy of half the world. And yet we get ourselves in a funk and say, geez, you know, poor me. So here we have this thing, two gifts. As far as money, one of them is what? To ask God to give us prosperity. The other one is ask God to give us the ability to enjoy it, okay? Notice with me, it's not a sin to have wealth. In fact, it's a gift, and we ought not lament it. We ought not say, oh, I feel bad. My ship came in and I bought the right stock. I bought Amazon, you know, 5 years ago. I'm on easy. You know what? That's just God's grace. Celebrate that and say thank you. But notice this. God gave you the ability and the opportunity to acquire wealth. So if you have been able to accumulate goods, just be thankful and I also ask for God to give you the wisdom to be able to enjoy it. You know what? Money was one of the big ones, but there's another one. Injustice is meaningless, right? There is something else meaningless that occurs on earth. Righteous men who get what the wicked deserve, and wicked men who get what the righteous deserve. I say that this too is meaningless. Have you been disappointed by some injustice in your life? Your health, politics at work, losing a relationship due to an unfair misunderstanding. I want you to know, sometimes life, excuse me, forget, let me take out the qualifier. Life isn't fair, okay? You are going to experience things that are kind of like, wow, that wasn't fair. And there's something in most of us that complains when it's not fair. And right here, Solomon says, yeah, I know, I see it. Life's not fair. You know the very next verse? The next verse is this. So, after you've suffered some injustice, you've been righteous, but you've gotten what the wicked deserve, I commend enjoyment of life, because nothing is better for a man under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. So, when you get the shaft, it's kind of like, whatever, and you need to go out for a nice meal and be with people who love you and that you love, and you know, and we rise above it because we know that this is not the end of the whole deal here, right? Why does he want us to enjoy life? Because living is better than death. Okay, this is getting ugly, isn't it? Go, eat your food with gladness. Drink your wine with a joyful heart, for it is now that God favors what you do. Always be clothed in white and always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy life with your wife whom you love all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun. All of your meaningless days. For this is your lot in life and your toilsome labor under the sun. Whatever you do, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For in the grave where you are going, there is neither working nor planning nor knowledge nor wisdom. First of all, I want to make sure you know this. Whatever you find to do, do it with all your might. You might listen to all this meaningless stuff and say, you know what? I think I'm going to quit my job. I think I'm going to put my feet up, and I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to do nothing, right? Guess what? He wants us to be diligent. God gave us abilities, and he doesn't want us to sit back, and you're a steward of those abilities. He doesn't want us to do nothing, but he wants us to have the wisdom to know that, you know what? This isn't my meaning. My meaning, it goes so much deeper than the fact that I'm good at whatever you're good at. But whatever you're good at, please do it, because that's your lot in life. Okay, all right. So you ready for this? It's instructions for the young. You guys still with me, or did you guys check out? Instructions for the young. Don't worry, be happy. There's a song that goes like that, right? Okay. Light is sweet, and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years a man may live, let him enjoy them all. But let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything comes to meaningless. I think the days of darkness are death. We will be dead more years than we'll be alive. All right, and we need to remember that while we're alive. Okay, be happy, young man, while you are young. Let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see, but know that all these things God will bring you to judgment. So then, banish anxiety from your heart. Cast off the troubles of the body, for youth and vigor are also meaningless, right? Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. What does he tell? What does he tell? Enjoy life. Enjoy its pleasures. Enjoy the wealth of God gives it to you. Enjoy its loves. Follow your heart. Enjoy its adventures. Whatever God, your eyes see, go do all this. In fact, we'll take Madison Avenue. Do it with gusto, right? But no, they're not the answer. They're not your meaning. Accept them for what they are and what they can do for us. Don't put expectations on them that they cannot fulfill. How many of you have ever looked forward to something and you were so looked forward to it, and then when you did it, you said, you know, I don't know what to do with myself now that I've accomplished that goal or had that experience. I'm still me. And banish anxiety from your heart. Jesus said, you know, what does your worrying accomplish? Replace it with faith in God. I don't know about you, but I know a lot of people who spend a lot of time worrying, and here, right here. And you guys are thinking, oh, what's my future going to be? Who am I going to marry? Where should I go to school? Which kind of a job? I mean, you guys have a lot of things, a lot of decisions to make. And those are big decisions, and some people can stress over them. And some people can say, Lord, give me wisdom, help me to make the best decision I can. Okay, Solomon's conclusion. Solomon's conclusion. I just lost Al. That's how long I'm going. I'm sorry, go back one. My fault. Okay, now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or bad. I want to make sure you know, if you're visiting today, we've gone to the 10,000-foot level and looked down at our lives as human beings. Okay? Last week, Kendrick taught about how Jesus came 600 years after Solomon to give us abundant life. Okay? Next week, Kendrick is going to teach on the last prayer that Jesus gave, last prayer that Jesus made for his followers. Right? Today, we've been kind of philosophical about what are we doing with our lives, but the answer is a relationship with Christ. And I pray that if you came this week, that we got your attention enough that next week you'll come back and hear more teaching more explicitly about Christ. You ready for the biggest irony of the whole lesson? Solomon was a fool. He's the wisest guy I ever lived, right? Robinson, where do you get off calling him a fool? If we go back in 1 Kings, King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter. Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, Hittites. They were from the nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines. That's 1,000. I mean, I don't know. I got all the names straight, much less, you know, relationship. And his wives led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his hearts after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth and the goddess of the Sidonians, and Moloch, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David his father had done. The Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. God appeared to him twice, once after he was put on the throne and once after he built the temple, right? So the Lord said to Solomon, since this is your attitude and you have not kept my covenant and my decrees, which I commanded you, I will most certainly tear the kingdom away from you and give it to one of your subordinates. Guess what, folks? Solomon didn't follow his own advice, right? We can take the explicit language, and if you guys are, you know, still out there wondering who you're going to marry, you know, in Corinthians it tells you that you should be married to a person with the same faith. Otherwise, your house divided is a little crazy. But the fact is that Solomon said, fear God and obey his commands, but you know what? He didn't think it applied to him. He thought he could get away with it. And notice with me, he did, I think, for a good period of his life. He had all these foreign wives, and he was still devoted to God. Until when? When he grew old. And for those of us that are older than 30, just barely, for us to be thinking about, as I get older, am I still passionate about following God? Am I gambling? Are there some commands? Are there some things I know God would have me not do, but I think I can get away with it? Wisest man in the world tried it, and in the end it crashed and burned, because at his death, God was angry at him, and he did take away the kingdom. So as we think about what we're doing and why we're doing it, I just hope and pray that we will grow old and we will lay a foundation in our younger years, and that we will not lose our faith and lose God's favor, that will honor him from beginning to end. Can I pray for you? Father in heaven, I pray for this community, for this group of people who are following.